Really illustrates today's show, because we are the world. And in New York City, a little over a week ago, there was huge reaction, demonstration, protest, and the speakers and the UN summit. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about many organizations that are doing a lot of things and encourage you to join an organization, become at least a part-time activist. My name is Bobby Elias, and Let's Create a Better World is our show. We have a lot of shows on healthy aging also. Today we have a great show with one of the people that was at the show. His name is Seth Adler. He is the head of the Left Forum, one of the major groups that was promoting that event. But we're going to also talk about activism in this country and around the world, protests, and what we can do about them with solutions. So hang in there the next few weeks. By the way, this show was taped, and we're going to get some other people. So next week we're going to have another show with some of the major leaders talk strictly about the climate change and about the forum, and I mean, not the forum, the event. The event and the before, during, and after of the event, of what's going to happen with climate change and all the countries and the things going on around the world, Obama, you name it. We're going to have a complete show. And we have today, though, we have a poem. It's a 7-minute clip, a statement and poem by a young lady named Kathy Jetnik. I can't pronounce her last name, but she is a young lady from the Marshall Islands, and she's going to give a stirring speech that brought people to tears. It's incredible. It's a great one. We're going to have this on this week and again next week. That's how good this poem is. All right, let's get to just one more thing about next week. The next few weeks, we're going to have a story about a new film coming out that you might want to get involved with. It's about the humanitarian film that's changing the world, that wants to change the world. Then we're going to have Dr. Sarah Larson, a holistic doctor who's going to speak about not only healthy aging, but about household goods and about the environment also. All right, let's get to our guest, Seth Adler. Seth is the director of Left Forum in New York City. Welcome to the show, Seth. How are you?
I'm fine, Bob. It's great to talk with you again.
Yes. You and I had a great talk earlier, and I'd like you to, you're welcome to tell us about the Left Forum whenever you'd like, but I'd like to get your statement about what you explained to me, what a beautiful event this was in New York City on September the 21st. I think it was a Sunday a week and a half ago. All the different groups and the types of groups and the colorfulness of it. Can you give us a little rundown on that, please?
I'm sure. It was quite extraordinary for for all of us in New York to see what amounted to, about a tenth of the population of New York City, if you counted in numbers, coming out and on the streets with a diversity of groups and people from around the world that probably parallels the United Nations. The amount of organizing that took place to get the People's Climate March going is very exciting, because in some ways it's not just about the final day in the, of course in this case it was 4 days of activism on all imaginable levels, from schools to the United Nations to basic occupation down at Wall Street and so forth. There were so many facets of what happens when one has a seminal event that all can organize around and so many can agree with, but it's also what goes on in the many, many months before, as the vital political questions are raised as, so what can we do to change the conditions of complicity and complacence in the decline of the world's ecological structure? Those conversations, led by people such as Bill McKibben of 350.org and Naomi Klein, who has just written a book on capitalism and climate change, and so many grassroots organizations, and they really, just by looking at that organizing of the months, you could see the sensitivity to the scope and immensity of the problem and how it could be represented in the activism that came to a beautiful sort of climax on the Sunday the 21st, where at least 400,000 people, by my count, as I was stuffed in, but one of the many points of the march and the actions and so forth, this mass of humanity expressing themselves. It was very exciting to behold, and we can talk about the components and elements about it, because one shouldn't forget, the climate and the challenge of climate justice is also the challenge of spiritual justice. It's also the challenge of social justice, economic justice, and cultural justice, the educational systems, the places and spaces where we as people learn to understand our world and what to do about it. In many ways, they have been remiss, we could say, in really bringing forth the scope of the problems and the ways to organize against these problems, or to solve them, of course.
Great, beautiful introduction to what happened there. I love it. I wish I could have been there. I'm in Los Angeles, and I have been in New York a few times. It's a great city with the diversity, like you said, and so many great organizations there, which is a microcosm of what's going on all over the world, and I love it. Things are getting worse with climate change. In the year 2013, we went backwards in emissions and all the different problems. And Obama's not doing much. And in a few minutes, we're going to have a tape. We're going to get to hear this young lady, 26-year-old young lady from the Marshall Islands, give a stirring speech on the last day of the event to the whole United Nations group. And they came to tears. It was just immense. We're going to hear that in a few minutes. But a little more on what happened in New York and your thoughts on what we can do about it, and then we're going to get into the tape.
Well, absolutely. So the march itself was built in a way that represented the diversity, not just of New York and all the boroughs, because, my gosh, from Occupy Sandy to the movement against evictions and for immigrants' rights, all forefront, at the very front of the march, were the First Nations peoples, and so many of the different nations and indigenous Native American groups came out, and when you see these big beautiful sort of floats and posters of expressing the need to transform, way to the core of our relationships to nature and to animals and so forth. Leading the march were those groups, as well as the social justice. I mentioned the immigrant rights and the other groups. But, you know, in many respects, to think about climate change, one should also think about conditions in urban and rural America, from Appalachia to Flint, Michigan, to Detroit and so forth, to New Orleans. And when we look at who is disproportionately affected, it is always people of color and poor people. It is always people struggling for the better life that they really have, you know, sort of the misfortune, through no reason of any rational explanation I can have, of living in spaces in which the pollutions and the waters and the others are almost unlivable. They were at the forefront of the march, and behind them included so many different community and grassroots organizations. For example, in the spiritual justice movements where I was marching, there were about 30,000 people there. And, you know, it was wonderful to see not only the Islamic groups and the Jewish groups and the evangelical groups and others there, but also the atheists were invited in and had bold, wonderful banners in the spiritual justice communities that were marching 30,000 strong. So that it gives you an example of how, in some ways, a certain conciliation can happen on the street. Would that it would be reflected, even in New York City, in the halls of the, you know, the the courts, the police systems, the city council, and so forth. And while there was support from the unions, which another component, which was quite marvelous, we all have to look at, so where are these pension funds going in terms of the companies? Is it the big oil companies there? Yes, indeed it is, in many of the pension funds of some of the illustrious, you know, governmental and other organizations. Right. So we have these challenges at the same time. These were addressed. You know, the question of its political impact is a very important one, Bob. That is, in many respects, it's sort of an old saw that, you know, getting out and protesting really doesn't do anything. The real change is not just around compromise and incremental change in policy matters in Washington, D.C. It's also in the Board of Education, or we do know that as we look at Colorado today. It's also in the City Council, you know, and we know that as we see, you know, sort of the broad fights for that. But the idea that a protest and resistance is relatively superficial is one that needs to be dashed in many respects. You know, there needs to be, in some ways, a better appraisal of the interconnection of one struggle to the other. And so the 4 days of activism in New York included many mutually supported components for the educators and those in movements like the Open University, the Free University, and other attempts to deal with the neoliberal onslaught to, in some ways, mechanize and rationalize education into more like a vocational place of life rather than a place to learn about the world. These first few days, I mentioned Naomi Klein in various teach-ins and speeches, but also Bill McKibben, head of 350.org. They have wonderful things to say to people that engage them in a world that is not just presented on the news as, you know, basically sports, weather, and who's hurting who. No, it's presented in ways that this is what you can do. There are movements to disinvest throughout the presbyteries and the other, you know, large institutions of this country to disinvest from non-renewable resourced energy companies. And these movements are taking off, and this climate march represents not just the people on the ground, but also the decisions by funders and others to move away, as we all did, and we're part of the anti-apartheid disinvestment and boycott movements that worked. You know, we're watching how it came to a head at this march, but also before that. And for the young sort of movement activist people in the anti-authoritarian communities, and that includes the religious justice communities, there was a Flood Wall Street action, which thousands and thousands came. Even Mayor de Blasio was very interesting. You know, the change in New York is somewhat of a sea change, but it also is a huge political machine that doesn't move that much. But nonetheless, he basically said to the 40,000 police force of New York City, now don't arrest or be brutal with these folks. They're young folks and old folks and others lying on the street on Wall Street. And why are they doing this? Because there is a connection, as they say, between climate change or climate disaster and capitalist destruction. And they're making those connections. They're lying down. They're putting their bodies on the street. And they feel that it's not just climate justice. It's also systems change. And if we don't address ourselves as living in educational systems, transportation systems, and indeed economic systems, in this case, one can call it a rather warped capitalist system or group of systems. If we don't address that, you know, tomorrow when we come back after this march and rally, conditions will proceed apace with that disproportional control over the resources of the world. So those messages were front and center and supported everywhere. The challenge that I sort of just opened up with, that a protest and resistance may not do much, should be rethought when you come to seeing all the rich parts of it. And yet there's some valid elements of it, too. The work that I'm so fortunate to do in Left Forum, which is a convergence of thousands every year, it's now the 11th year for Left Forum, yes, which brings together all these disparate, diverse voices to, I could put it this way, at least talk with each other about your differences and commonalities. The work that I do is also reflected in that challenge that, so what happens the day after the Flood Wall Street, the day after the march?
Excuse me, Seth. I want to hold that thought. The studio is ready to put this tape on. We have a tape, and I want you your thoughts on this also, by a young lady, 26-year-old young lady from the Marshall Islands, which is surrounded by water and is actually sinking because the oceans are rising. This country is in dire, dire trouble, as are many countries in that general area.
Absolutely.
So let's hear a tape. If our engineer is ready to put this tape on by the young lady, her name is Kathy Jenk Kijinia. I might be mispronouncing the last name. Listen especially the last 30 seconds to minute. She really gets the crowd going, and actual tears come to most people's eyes. This is such a stirring, complete talk about what's really going on in the world. If our engineer is ready, we're ready. Thank you.
Yahweh Komolib. My family and I have traveled a long way to be here today, all the way from the Marshall Islands. The Marshall Islands encompasses more than 2 million square kilometers of ocean, and so it makes sense that our culture is one of voyaging and navigation. One of our most beloved legends features a canoe race between 10 brothers. Their mother, holding a heavy bundle, begged each of her sons for a ride on their canoe. But only the youngest listened and took her along for the ride, not knowing that his mother was carrying the first sail. With the sail, he won the race and became chief. The moral of the story is to honor your mother and the challenges life brings. Climate change is a challenge that few want to take on, but the price of inaction is so high. Those of us from Oceania are already experiencing it firsthand. We've seen waves crashing into our homes and our breadfruit trees wither from the salt and drought. We look at our children and wonder how they will know themselves or their culture should we lose our islands. Climate change affects not only us islanders, it threatens the entire world. To tackle it, we need a radical change of course. This isn't easy, I know. It means ending carbon pollution within my lifetime. It means supporting those of us most affected to prepare for unavoidable climate impacts. And it means taking responsibility for irreversible loss and damage caused by greenhouse gas emissions. The people who support this movement are indigenous mothers like me, families like mine, and millions more, standing up for the changes needed and working to make them happen. I ask world leaders to take us all along on your ride. We won't slow you down. We'll help you win the most important race of all, the race to save humanity. I would now like to share with you a poem that I have written for my daughter, Matefele Benam. Dear Matefele Benam, you are a seven-month-old sunrise of gummy smiles. You are bald as an egg and bald as the Buddha. You are thighs that are thunder, shrieks that are lightning, so excited for bananas, hugs, and our morning walks along the lagoon. Dear Matefele Benam, I want to tell you about that lagoon. That lazy, lounging lagoon, lounging against the sunrise. Men say that one day, that lagoon will devour you. They say it will gnaw at the shoreline, chew at the roots of your breadfruit trees, gulp down rows of seawalls, and crunch through your island's shattered bones. They say you, your daughter, and your granddaughter too, will wander rootless with only a passport to call home. Dear Matefele Benam, don't cry. Mommy promises you no one will come and devour you. No greedy whale of a company sharking through political seas. No backwater bullying of businesses with broken morals. No blindfolded bureaucracies gonna push this mother ocean over the edge. No one's drowning, baby. No one's moving. No one's losing their homeland. No one's becoming a climate change refugee. Or should I say, no one else. To the Carteret Islanders of Papua New Guinea and to the Taro Islanders of Fiji, I take this moment to apologize to you. We are drawing the line here because we, baby, are going to fight. Your mommy, daddy, bubu, jima, your country, and your president too, we will all fight. And even though there are those hidden behind platinum titles who like to pretend that we don't exist, who like to pretend that the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Kiribati, Maldives, Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, floods of Algeria, Colombia, Pakistan, and all the hurricanes, earthquakes, and tidal waves didn't exist? Still, there are those who see us, hands reaching out, fists raising up, banners unfurling, megaphones booming, and we are canoes blocking coal ships. We are the radiance of solar villages. We are the fresh, clean soil of the farmers' past. We are teenagers, blooming petitions. We are families, biking, recycling, reusing, engineers building, dreaming, designing, artists painting, dancing, writing, and we are spreading the word. And there are thousands out on the streets, marching hand in hand, chanting for change now. And they're marching for you, baby. They're marching for us because we deserve to do more than just survive. We deserve to thrive. Dear Matefele Benam, you are eyes heavy with drowsy weight. So just close those eyes and sleep in peace. Because we won't let you down. You'll see.
Wow. That was beautiful. That was really immense. I mean, remember, she's doing this to her little daughter, and this is a poem for the ages. This is a poem to inspire the world, the movement, and we're going to play this again next week. Plus, we're going to have big-time leaders that were part of the big organizations that put together, along with Beth, this big, big event. So we'll have it on next week for the whole hour on our show, again, Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, on here, Let's Create a Better World. You know, that tape, Seth, that was just heartwarming. It was just, she capsuled everything together. Remember, this girl's only 26 years old, but she sees climate change every day where she lives. Your thoughts on the tape, and then we're going to go into the other stuff that we talked about.
Well, it's so moving. I wanted to ask you, this was delivered to a body at the United Nations?
Yes, on Tuesday, the last day of the event, to the entire body, and people not only stood up and cheered and clapped, but tears in many, many people's eyes were streaming. I'm telling you.
Yes. I mean, it also harkens to the question of, it's so beautiful. There was, I guess about 2 months ago, the representative from the Philippines went on a hunger strike at the United
Yes.
Nations, and decided this is it. You know, our countries, our islands, our countries are not withstanding, even at this point, the ravages of industrialization and plunder of resources, and they're just notwithstanding. And he had to put his body on the line. He went on that fast for the all the days of the meeting itself. And
right.
You know, it's sort of, we, you know, remember way back to the acts of the Buddhist monks, the self-immolation against the war in Vietnam. You know, that people have you know, really literally seen that it's their own lives and bodies that must be put on the line and at some point. Now, we all can't do it, it's true, and yet the circumstances of the twin pillars of the power in both industry and the corporate and state elite, in a sense, those two twin pillars, sadly, I mean, it wouldn't have had to have been this way, have in many respects, exactly as she said in her poem, behind their platinum, you know, badges and labels, in many respects, secretly, because what is some of the grand secrets? Well, one of the grand secrets is if you look at the skewing of power in politics towards a very few elite, and then you go into industries, the polluting industries, the wasteful overproducing of consumer goods that are not even by any stretch of the imagination needed, let alone distributed evenly around the world. You look at the big industries and so forth, it's a handful of human beings. They have to, in some sense, and I say it today because it's also a system that many of us do follow less consciously, they have to hide behind those platinum badges and so forth, because it's not, you know, it's such a small minority at this point, getting ever smaller. The questions then, they're really challenging questions that, as you said, beautifully put by her, expressing so much of what needs to be done personally as well as spiritually, as well as intellectually and politically. The questions are, and they're ongoing ones, how to transform these bastions of power and economy and culture that are relatively just a few people but have a lot of, we could say, support on the less conscious level by many of us, and where and when do we examine these, or do we lay down the line and say enough is enough, no more investment in these companies? Those are some of the places, and there are many other places. Just harkening back, Bob, to the climate march, you know, there was a very interesting ad campaign and PR sort of campaign done to support the climate march and to bring people out from all the boroughs. And so the subways and other places had these very compelling posters put throughout them. Mind you, that even the MTA union, the big old union of the transportation workers, the subway, they supported this. They even had almost unprecedented, and one of these posters on their website, it's a city website, and here you click through and you can find out how through the MTA to be part of the climate march. At the same time, these posters sort of speak of the challenges of power. One of the posters, of the many, said that basically bankers and hipsters, be there or be square, you know, something to that effect. It was, but, and you think about it, and one could be both critical and think about these twin pillars of power and economy and say, you know, the systems must be transformed. So bankers being called on to come to the climate march, now many would be critical of that, saying, well, the people who are suffering the most are not them. But, you know, there are many types of banks in this world. There are alternative banks. There's the small scale microloans. There are the public banks, I believe, in North or South Dakota, where people's needs are front and center, and the idea of making a profit off of everything or dying, as the, you know, more insidious insidious capitalist mantra now goes, doesn't hold, and they're doing fine. You look at the big cooperatives in the Mondragon in Spain, in the Basque region, where they have these much more public and cooperatively owned by all of the workers banks that do not do these reprehensible things with figuring out how yet to take a larger portion of people's savings and transfer them over to the very few wealthy. So one could say in the climate justice march that, well, bankers, yes, cooperative banking, time banking, other forms of exchange that are non-monetary, these can go under the rubric of transforming the banking industries. And then one can also say, well, is that possible without also transforming the corporate oil companies and the others? No, in many respects, those dialogues and those conversations, they're hard conversations, and we might even say in hundreds of years in the U.S., amongst other places, where there's much more developments in really challenging these twin pillars. In the U.S., maybe because there's the most to lose by that corporate and political elite, the fragmentation of political movements that swing on the side of liberation, on the side of left and radical and revolutionary thoughts and hopes, have very, very fragmented and difficult conditions to face. But nonetheless, they're there.
Excellent. Excellent talk. You know, for our listeners that tune in late, my name is Bobby Elias. The show is Let's Create a Better World. I'm speaking to Seth Adler of the Left Forum in New York City, and we're talking about the climate change march and the activities around that. And next week we'll have on more people, the head coordinators of the event, that speak strictly on climate change, what's happened and what's going to happen, what's going on with the U.S. summit, the petition that everybody's signing, and more details and deep talk on that. You know, Seth, at the event, the big event was Sunday, the 21st of September, which was about 10 days ago. Then on Monday, there was a march to Wall Street. And then on Tuesday was that big meeting where the young lady that we just heard gave that poem. That was the final day of the summit. They voted on a number of things. And I'm so glad that they put her on there. But here's what I take from that whole, the big event that happened. First of all, I like what she said about the carbon pollution and the gas emissions. But here's what I saw, and I read a lot of reports of, not a lot, but a few major reports of what happened during those 3 days. What the bottom line to the third day on Tuesday when the U.S., when the United Nations met, to me, one of the bottom lines was that Obama and the United States did not support a major, major fund designed to help the poor countries. That tells you something about our country. And that's pretty sad. Because, and you know, Seth, this event, the United Nations was finally hit by a lot of countries that are, with the big march and the activities going on around the world, because there were activities all over the world on that day, this has got to impact, and it is impacting, the leaders, you know, Obama, the government, the climate change people. It's got to impact it, and we just got to keep following up, and we're going to talk a lot about that next week. Your thoughts? Well, about not only the event, but you can go on about organizations and about the movement.
Absolutely. Well, one of your, you know, what you just said, there's a sad irony. And so literally the next day and two, right after the climate justice actions and then the UN meeting, the president announces that we're going to be dropping those bombs in Iraq and Syria. Now, you know, in many ways one could say, well, there's no alternative. Be real and all and pragmatic in politics. But let's at least think about both the irony and what we all may be able to do and what is going on that can try to address those sort of contradictions. You know, dropping those bombs, you know, when the ISIS moved closer to the oil fields and has now taken oil fields, in some ways, isn't that what strikes at the irony of now going to war to preserve oil fields and preserve, you know, the further, you know, rapacious just destruction of the land and the environment and in building up the war machines. I, you know, in some ways we just had this huge climate march and this world coming out and believing me, around the world, millions of people. And then you see this move to, in many ways, not admit even a bit that, you know, that war machine moves us in the very opposite direction. It's protecting interests of the big oil and other extractive companies. You know, it's, and so that compels us to think about, well, what's being done in this world? What is being done? Because in some ways the political leaders, no matter how passionate and eloquent they are, and certainly Obama is extraordinary in his eloquence. I remember back when he first ran for president to his speech at Philadelphia about the Reverend Wright, and he was in some ways wanting to distance himself, which, by the way, is a very interesting and challenging element, because the Reverend is connected to huge constituencies in the black and freedom struggle communities. Nonetheless, the speech of Obama's was as passionate and interesting and important on race as you can imagine. So the eloquence of the president is almost unparalleled, and at the same time, the actual, here's another sort of the twin pillars of militarism and environmental destruction that has come under the name of this eloquent speech giver is just, again, it's almost a non-change between the Republican administrations, or it's even gotten worse in terms of the level of repression now for immigrant people and so forth. So we have to, you know, in some ways take a very sort of sober assessment that there aren't really the type of political and social and cultural movements in the United States that have been able to reverse even under the most eloquent and interesting change in the political structures at the very top. And so we look elsewhere, and the Left Forum, just to bring in organizations and so forth, so the Left Forum brings about 5,000 people from around the world, around the region and so forth each year for 3 days of workshops, events, artistic events, and speeches and networking and type of digging into the dialogue that's needed. 1,200 speakers came out this last year, and the challenging theme, each year there's a different theme. This one was reform and or revolution, imagining a world with transformative justice. So we had Harry Belafonte, the esteemed Harry Belafonte, talking about activism preceding Martin Luther King and the great civil rights and black freedom struggles that Belafonte was so center with. We had Angela Davis then talking about worldwide movements of against racism, and also to challenge capitalism in detail. We had the elected city council member Sharma Sawant from the Socialist Alternative Party, who was elected in a real groundswell out in that part of the country, and, you know, fighting for the $15 an hour wage for people, of which she both then and the whole organization in its grassroots move won that in Seattle, even going against, you know, Boeing and the other companies that are saying, well, wait a minute, let's do this over a let's do this over a 100-year period or something like that. While I'm exaggerating, it really is in many sense that type of, you know, David and Goliath, or, you know, we could say other sort of metaphors for the battles that are to come. They're not easy. Elsewhere in the world, Bob, there is a lot of motion in the progressive and social change direction right now. As we speak, in Spain and in the lower part of the European, you know, sort of continent, where you have Greece, Turkey, Portugal, Spain, Italy, the social and political change there, and the stress there, no doubt, is on a major level, starting in Turkey with that, what we could call the Gezi revolution in the square that was going to be transformed into really a sort of honoring of company and other elements that were totally out of step with what many people in Turkey wanted. Those that the protests that started there and built up around were in some ways about change in life conditions. These are young people and other people who connect the destruction of the environment with the destruction of the education systems and the raising of tuitions everywhere. These are folks who connect over-consumerism with the lack of even basic necessities in their life. And you stretch it along the European corridor, Greece, with the rise of the Syriza party. And just to say, you know, again, in the milieu of the fragmented sort of left in the U.S., political party organizing a lot of times is identified with the Democrats and the Republicans. No, no, we don't want that. But, you know, in other parts of the world, it's much more organic and synthetic with social movements and justice movements. And so they're much bigger and they're much stronger. And the Syriza party is an outgrowth of these protests against horrendous austerity, you know, the basic slamming of human beings' income in the country by one-third by fiat coming from, you know, the European sort of common good and common market is something that is experienced to a point where young students and others in Greece have, you know, basically occupied the schools and squares and others and are planning in long term, not just in the form of political parties, but also in the form of horizontal movements to change the way power is decided. Moving towards Spain, there's a new party called Podemos, We Can, in Spain that arose out of years before Occupy in the United States, years and years of the neighborhoods, the people in the neighborhoods basically saying austerity, whatever name, if it goes by the Socialist Party in Spain or it goes by the, you know, centrist party in Spain, it's, we're not going to take it anymore. And so those assemblies, you know, 100,000 strong, doing these consensus-based horizontal forums of calling on people's voices to be equal in what they need and what they change, has now developed in Spain to where there's a very sort of interesting grassroots party that just gained like 8% of the vote in, I think, a course of a few months, and now is deciding in their convention how do they keep true to the neighborhood and assembly and horizontal democratic roots, which is much more different than our so-called representative or republic of a democratic system. You know, folks often don't know that the word democracy can be abused and misused as well as extolled in many ways, and it's not just one thing, contrary to what, you know, in some sort of empire-building fashion, many of our political leaders use democracy almost as a sledgehammer to just transform countries away from much more horizontalist forms of deciding what to do with their lives, resources together. Throughout Latin America, there are so many forms of participatory democracy where people in the favelas in Brazil and elsewhere are by the tens of thousands deciding not just what to do with governmental money, but what to do with everyday challenges of survival, water, and others. Much is happening, and in the Left Forum, we have the fortune of just seeing them, these movements come through and express themselves, and people learn things, not only that, but they network and make those connections. And Left Forum is just one of many forums. The World Social Forum is yet another one that takes place in different countries that has hundreds of thousands of people gathering in it for weeks at a time to do this type of grassroots building, remembering that, you know, yet another part of the sort of corporate plutocracy, the large corporate media, as Gil Scott-Heron said, that revolution that we can see if we look very carefully and we get out a little bit will not be televised.
Wow. You know, that's great. You know, this event that happened on the 21st, a week and a half ago, it also brought out, as you said, not only so many different minority people of color and other labor groups, all these movement groups and activist groups were just in mass. I know that. But it also, this whole event, to me, from what I've read, brought out a resurgence in everything, in the fight against cold, fight against climate change, mm-hmm. against the nuclear situation, the pharmaceutical industry, Wall Street, the banks, the media, the war machine, the oil machine. All these people, all these groups are just devastating not only the planet, but people, and the gap between the rich and the poor is, as you mentioned, also Greece, Portugal, countries over there are falling apart financially. So the world, we need a stronger movement. Let's talk about what we can do to make things better in the closing minutes, Seth. We've only got so much time, so don't take too long here. We want to talk about what can we do, what can people do out there listening to make this a better world. I say join a group. I say listen, learn, listen to this radio shows like this and this station. Your thoughts on that, please.
Well, it all depends on where people sit, too. You know, in many ways, de Tocqueville said that the long time ago, he said that the U.S. is almost unique in the amount of volunteerism that takes place. And, you know, folks have their own capacities and abilities within families or with themselves, and we all are feeling more stress of having this sort of condition of precarious labor where we have to take one, two, or three jobs to survive. So granted, it's difficult, but you can go along the whole spectrum from liberal to quote-unquote transformative and revolutionary, and find that there are so many activities. If one wants to constrain themselves to what's online and signing petitions and so forth, and we can call these, there are some great liberal traditions in which this happens. We can start with the networks such as MoveOn.org and the type of organizations that get people not just signing petitions but coming to meetups and thinking about what happens in the halls of politics. In the case with MoveOn.org, and another one is Netroots for people who have more of a technical sort of propensity, where they started really helping the movements to both to elect Obama, and you can get in touch with these groups and in many ways do a lot online, and for some that may feel the best. But remember also, as one moves through the spectrum, these social justice communities, and these are the communities, immigrants and activists of color and community organizations that are fighting in City Hall and at the boards of education and so forth, proliferate in every single city. And while I can go over names, you know, like workers' centers and Jobs with Justice and so many, you know, I'd also recommend looking at the Left Forum website and also coming to the Left Forum conferences and events that happen, and even thinking about, you know, forums oneself in other parts of the countries, because it's good to do this type of connecting to, you know, learn the names and see the people and get involved. And so moving along a spectrum from, let's say, you know, online and what folks can do to some of the more engaged on the street and communities and so forth, it really depends on what one feels passionate about. The political parties that are not the two main parties are very active in every city in the country, and they're doing a lot of important things. I mentioned the election of Sharma Sawant, a city councilor, but also, you know, in other cities around the country, that left-inflected passion that's put into running races for boards of education, and on the local level, we've got, you know, so many parties. We can name lists of them, the Vermont Progressives, the Peace and Freedom, the Green Parties, and then there are the socialist parties. If one likes the more decentralized types of political revolutionary organizations, there's the Socialist Party. If one likes the more organized and so forth, there's groups like Freedom Road Socialist and the International Socialist Organization. These are not words to be just sort of feared of, because, you know, in many ways we've had too much fear-mongering in the cultural machines and politics in this country, so that words like socialism or talking about capitalism as a system that must be changed and ended are often thought of as, oh, okay, we can't go there in our conversations, but we must go there now, because we all in some ways are also complicit. We all, you know, in the various things we do, and there's, you know, nothing wrong with doing that. It's just to be more aware that when we enter our daily lives and our workplaces, we can look towards what seems more fair and what seems more empowering. We can take risks, though, in this whole grassroots sphere by joining organizations past just the online. The political parties are doing a lot to change conditions at the very heart of power, and without which we've got great challenges. Religious justice groups proliferate from the American Friends Service Committee to so many others that people will find the more anti-authoritarian traditions, the one that connects with not just religious justice, but the anti-nuclear movements and the peace movements. Everywhere you will find people are getting together in communities. I guess one starts, again, I mentioned the Left Forum because it's a crossroads for thousands of these organizations, and so it's one place to start getting resources and make decisions. And then, you know, in everyday communities, one will also look towards what exists, and I'd recommend going online and just doing some good searches, too.
Excellent, excellent. Now, one of the things that people, especially in, we have a lot of listeners in New York City, want to contact you, give your phone number out, and you can give more insight to people if they want to become active and join a group. You can encourage them to join your group or
right.
other groups that were at the march. So give us slowly, and please read slowly, because we have people that complain that some of the information is given out too fast. So slowly and carefully, all your information, and hold on, because we still have a few minutes left.
Good. So the website first to go to is leftforum.org, leftforum.org, www, if you want to put that in front. And the phone numbers are 212-817-2003, 212-817-2003, leftforum.org. Email is best. We have an email with the same name. It's one word, leftforum@leftforum.org. So it repeats itself, leftforum@leftforum.org. And as an effort here at we're at the CUNY Graduate Center, sort of right next to the Empire State Building, the heart of much of it down here. It's a quite a wonderful place. It's all volunteer based. None of these thousands of speakers who come, whether it's the Vice President of Bolivia or it's Michael Moore or Cornel West, they've never gotten paid. Nobody. This is much more people come. So they want to build the networks, and on a daily basis, we do all sorts of work in media, PR. We have events coming up, and Left Forum is unusual in that it's not really an organization in the classical sense. It's more like a project and an organizing effort to empower the other groups to build their organizations, and that's why it's built so much wonderful trust and community in the people who come and present and the people who come for the arts and the other elements, and it's growing that way. And of course, as a project, donations and all of those elements are what keep it going. So it's a wonderful project. The conference itself is, always brings in people, students, and others at basically no and low cost to sustain it here in Manhattan, of all the places. But again, the email that one can get in touch with us is leftforum@leftforum.org.
Great, great. Well, listen, I'm going to sign you out now, and we're going to have you back, have more announcements about your event coming up in December. We don't have time to talk about that now, but I'll be letting our customers know through the promotions and through this show about upcoming events, and yours will be one. You're having an activity coming up in December that I know
Thank
about.
Thank you, Bob. It's wonderful talking with you, as always.
You did a great job, and we covered a lot of territory. Thank you again for being with us.
Good. You're welcome. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Great, great inside information. Don't forget, next week we're going to have that poem read again. The young lady that covered everything so well, she made a statement, and she dedicated a poem to her very young daughter. She herself is only 26 years old in the Marshall Islands, where they're being deluged. The ocean is rising over there immensely, and the land is going down. Some people think it's going to go under. And if things go the way they are, you never know. That might happen. So I want to let you know the next show is coming up. Next week we will be talking about the summit once again with some of the leaders of the summit, and strictly about the coal, the emissions, the things that are going on, and things that we need to do to make this a better world. Insofar as, and we have some great people. We're talking about Bill McKibbins, who we mentioned, also Naomi Klein was mentioned, and also Leslie Kagan, a person that did a big event and got the money for it, but also did a big event almost 30 years ago, and it was major, major. So we're going to have some great input next week, and hear the poem again. Then soon after, the next few weeks, we're going to have more into aging. I'll have Dr. Sarah Larson come on talking about household goods and how they're not very good for you, and about more into all forms of aging and what to do. Now, also, we're going to have a gentleman come on the show probably next week to talk about a new humanitarian movie that can actually stir people, inspire people to change the world. It's a heartwarming story that changes a lot of things in its content. So we'll also be talking about water, more into health, exercise, aging, dance, laughing, and being happy. All those things we're going to do. So be sure to stay with our show in the next upcoming weeks. So let me start saying goodbye to people. Before I say thanks to all our people, let me just say for you, this show is also called Healthy Aging, our second theme. Don't forget, a good diet of lots of vegetables and fruits, less dairy, less meat, or none. Become a vegan, become a vegetarian, become a raw foodist, or head in that direction at least. Then supplements. Make sure you get good supplements that are organic and healthy. Good drinks. I juice every day. Juicing is very, very important. Also exercise, dance, yoga, walking, power walking, so important. Then the mind. Keep your mind on very, very important things, very positive things. Stay away from negative people, negative issues, getting angry, getting stressed, positive. All right, thanks to the people that helped put this show together completely. First, thank you to our engineer, Jay. Thanks, and good job. Thank you to Casey, who does the archives and other working with the engineers, and Jason, who is the director of the PRN, and doing a great job. I want to thank our Los Angeles producer, Jimmy D. A special extra thanks to Stuart Hassel, who is really on the phones this week and doing research on all to get this show and next week's shows ready. We're going to have a great show next week. Thank you very much, Stuart. And we want to thank our guest today, Seth Adler of Left Forum. I want to thank you, the listener, for coming in with us. The name of the show is Let's Create a Better World. If we have time for our engineer to end up with our song, our theme song, We Are the World. Thank you again. We'll be on next week. Have a great week. Pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.